Arizona isn't just in our name. It's our home, too. That's why Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona is taking action for better health right here in Pima County. We're mobilizing resources to help make a difference in critical health issues, and we're offering new health plans for individuals and families in 2019. It all adds up to a healthier you, healthier community, a healthier Pima County. Here to protect what matters most, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona. Live fearless.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
All right, we are live here at Frog and Firkin. I'm Justin Spears, joined alongside here Michael Lev and Dominic Bachaco. We are a part of the Wildcaster and the Arizona Daily Star. You can download the Wildcaster app, available on the App Store and Google Play. You can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. So, guys, happy Thursday. We are here at Frog and Firkin. It's been a couple weeks since we've been here. Michael, Dominic, this is your first time.
My first time at Frog. How's it going?
It's not your first time at Frog.
For the podcast, I should specify. Okay. I come here like every week.
But. Are Dominic or Dom? Like, is Dominic sort of like your professional name? Or
yeah, I'll introduce myself as Dominic, but if you know me, you call me Dom.
Usually. I gotcha. What are we going with here?
You usually call me Dom, don't you?
I do, yeah. It's weird. You know, as we all know, like, Kevin, someone has been referring to me by name as Mike, though, which I don't really go by Mike. But for him, I'm going to, you know, make an exception. So
for Kevin Sumlin, you
for
go
Kevin
by Mike.
Sumlin, I will, yeah. But professionally, Michael.
Have you gotten to the point where you say Kev?
No, I just say Coach or it's gonna need Mr. Sumlin.
It's going to need an extension before we get to that level.
Yeah. So we are here at Frog and Firkin. They've been so awesome in hosting us all season long. How many podcasts is this for us? What number home game is this? Is number four?
This is home game number four, right? And there's still two more after this, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
they've been awesome.
Yeah,
nice. Frog and Firkin has been amazing.
Homecoming week.
And it's homecoming week. We still got many more podcasts here to go. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, we have a cool new feature on our app. It's a comment section. Download the Wildcaster app. It's available on the App Store and Google Play. And you scroll over to the right. There is a comment section with a microphone. You tap on the microphone. You record your message. And you will be a part of the next podcast. Any question you have about the Arizona Wildcats football team, just tap on the mic, record, say your name. And we'll get it on the air.
Or basketball,
because we do have a basketball podcast coming up here at Froggy.
Coming up real quick.
We have a comment, Chris. We'll get to him in just a little bit. But this weekend, the Arizona Wildcats take on the Oregon Ducks, 7:30 kickoff at Arizona Stadium. Arizona, man, after a thrilling game against UCLA, 31-30, a great performance by Rhett Rodriguez, but he gave Arizona chances to win, per Kevin Sumlin. So, Michael, I know we've talked about this, but where do the quarterbacks stand right now? Because Kevin Sumlin said that Sundays are always the players' day off. Monday, they talk about it. They go through some kind of protocol to make the decision the next day for the starting quarterback. But he said he could make the decision Tuesday, and here we are. We still don't know the starting quarterback for Arizona.
Yeah, my understanding is that Rhett and Khalil Tate have split first-team reps the last couple of practices. I don't know for a fact where that's headed, but my educated guess would be that if Khalil Tate is healthy enough to play, that he'll start. I don't think they're going to dress him and not play him. Right? Like, yeah. I don't think they go into the game saying, oh, we're going to start Rhett and then we'll see how it goes and bring in Khalil. I think it's more the other way around. Let's start with Khalil. You can always bring Rhett off the bench. He's used to that. I think, like, mentally, he can handle whatever role you throw at him. I also wouldn't be surprised if we saw Kevin Doyle make his debut. They kind of ditched that plan last week to throw in one of the freshmen. I think they might be headed in that direction. I don't know this for a fact. This is just based on talking to some people who might know some things. But I think when they come out against Oregon that Khalil's going to start. They're going to see how things go. Rhett will be available off the bench, and we might see Kevin Doyle come in for a series or two.
I love the Kevin Doyle bringing him in, because I've said this for weeks now to you and Ryan, Justin, is, you know, Arizona needs to see what they have. They're not making a bowl game this year, presumably.
The way things are going,
not officially, not gonna make a bowl game. Likely they're not. They got to win three of their next four.
Yeah.
Look, they got to see what they have, because they got a lot of quarterbacks sitting on the bench, and they got more quarterbacks coming in next year who are probably going to jump to the top of the depth chart sooner than later. So I think it's important to give Kevin Doyle a shot. I'm not saying start him, but sure, rotate him in how you did with Jamari Joyner a couple weeks before. Mm-hmm. He's not going to play that many meaningful snaps, and he doesn't give Arizona the best chance to win by any stretch. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for someone to see what he has moving forward, because there's going to be a logjam even more so than there is right now at quarterback next year.
The thing is, you can do it without it costing any eligibility
right.
for Kevin Doyle. They've already played Jamari Joyner a couple times. As people may or may not know, there's this new redshirt rule where you can play a player who hasn't previously used a redshirt in up to four games, and it doesn't cost them that season. So, you know, now's the time to throw guys out there and see what you've got. You know, Kevin Sumlin has made several references to that rule, how he's going to use it liberally throughout the season. We've seen various freshmen play. I think some point I should probably take a look at, you know, at how many games some of these guys have played to see, you know, whether they've crossed that four-game threshold or not. But Kevin Doyle is yet to appear in a game. So
yeah.
He's got a fresh slate. He could play the rest of the way and still be considered a redshirt freshman next year.
And you know, you bring up a good point. It's if they lose the next couple of games and they are officially out of bowl contention, or it's looking like they're going to be out of bowl contention, mm-hmm. why not have a tryout for all the young guys that you have on your roster? I mean, it's not just with the quarterbacks, it's with everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, Arizona has a lot of young players that could have an impact in the future, so you have to look across your roster and be like, okay, well, let's try out some guys. They're all young. Let's get them as much experience as possible without having to burn the redshirt rule. And even with the quarterbacks, I mean, what if Khalil Tate returns next year? I mean, I'm assuming he's going to return next year the way things are going. So then you're going to have a quarterback room of Khalil Tate, Rhett Rodriguez, Jamari Joyner, Kevin Doyle,
Grant Gunnell,
who just broke the Texas passing record.
We'll get into Khalil's future a little bit later in the show, but I highly doubt all six of those guys. Is that six guys?
Yeah, that's a lot.
I don't think they're all going to be here. You know how things are with quarterbacks these days. You know, it's a robust transfer market. It just is, right?
Yeah.
Guys, if they sort of see the writing on the wall that they're not going to play, they don't stick around. So I doubt that all of those guys are going to be back next year. But as far as playing freshmen, I mean, I think if you're Kevin Sumlin, you owe it to the seniors to keep trying to win as long as you are still bowl eligible. Once you're not anymore, like if they lose the next two games, then I think all bets are off for those last two. But, I mean, look, they still got a shot at this thing, right? They're 3-5. It's going to be an uphill battle, but three of the last four games are at home. So that helps. I think Oregon's really good. I don't think Colorado's amazing, right? I think they're beatable. ASU is beatable. So then, you know, if you can win those two games, then breaking it down that way, you got to win one of those other two. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be really tough. I'm not saying that there's a good chance, but it's possible.
No, and what you're saying, Lev, I mean, it starts with Oregon, I don't think anybody envisions Arizona beating Oregon this week.
It starts with Oregon. No pressure.
Right.
But it starts with Oregon.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, they got to, I don't know. I mean, if they could steal one from Oregon this week, it'd be huge, because that gives them a win they weren't supposed to have. And that's why last week's loss to UCLA hurt so bad, because that was one they kind of needed to have to make their bowl run here.
Yeah.
But if they steal one from Oregon, that's huge. And it kind of changes the script moving forward, but they still got to win a lot of games, and it's going to be tough with how much uncertainty there is.
Dom, I know you remember this. Mm-hmm. I think was it 4 years ago? Either 4 or 5 years ago, Arizona hosted Oregon. Oregon was they were a top five team.
They were number two.
They were number two in the country.
Mm-hmm.
They had Marcus Mariota, one of the most high pro. Man, that offense was just filthy that year. Oregon was highly ranked.
2012, right?
It was 13.
It was 12 or 13.
12 or 13, because I remember Kadeem Carey was playing for Arizona at that time. And that's what Kadeem Carey just completely went off. And
Scooby?
13 might have been the Scooby year when they were in Eugene.
No, that was 14.
14. Okay. So then it was 13.
I got a lot of good Oregon games in the past.
But that game, Arizona was like a 4-touchdown underdog, and they came out and just smacked Oregon at home.
That was
so it bodes well for U of A. You know, they're underdogs in this game.
I am a believer that there's no such thing as an easy road conference game in any league for anyone, unless you're Alabama this year. In which case, yeah. Sort of like, well, you know, LSU will not be easy for them a couple weeks from now. But there's always danger when you go on the road in the conference. You know, like the league opponents know you the best. When the game's at night, there's a certain energy, you know, in the building that's not usually present for a day game. It's homecoming, right? So you figure there's going to be a pretty robust crowd, and you're going to have, you know, some of the great teams of Arizona's past in the building,
yeah.
You know, on hand. You know, I'm sure they'll be involved in the coin flip, and there will be some sort of ceremony honoring the 1998 team, you know, perhaps the best team in school history. So
ever.
If you can't get fired up for that, you know, I don't think, like, intensity or motivation will be a problem. My issue is personnel.
Yeah.
Considering all the guys who've been hurt, you know, some of the key guys who, you know, may or may not come back for this game, like Khalil Tate and Laith Freck, and if they do, you know, how healthy are they going to be? Those would be my concerns. And you've got an Oregon team coming off a loss against Washington State, and they can kind of go one of two ways. They can either kind of have a hangover effect from that, or they can be really ornery and determined to, you know, get their season back on track. And I'm fearful that it's going to be the latter.
You talk about personnel. Oregon's got guys on their team.
Of course.
I mean, they got guys. But even young players, because they have cornerbacks coach Dante Williams, who used to coach at Arizona, and he was this mastermind recruiter that was able to bring in a couple of guys, and then once he left, some of Arizona's best recruits left. And hasn't there been a kind of like a rivalry between Arizona and Oregon in the last couple of years in terms of recruits?
There was Burmeister.
Burmeister and Hockey Burmeister. Woods.
Hockey Woods, that's right.
Well, yeah. And, well, the Austin, I don't know how to say it, Fualu.
Yeah.
The defensive end is another one. And then Cody Shear.
Yep.
Remember the offensive tackle, yep, who flipped like the morning of, who's not on the two deep, by the way. Hockey Woods doesn't really play cornerback,
no,
by the way. Braxton Burmeister's second string, maybe third string. Austin Fualu, the defensive end, he is a starter. But three of those four guys, it really hasn't worked out for them. So, you know, the grass isn't always greener.
You know, Burmeister,
but Arizona can use them.
Burmeister was supposed to play against Arizona last year because their starter last year was hurt. And Burmeister, yeah, came in, played a couple games, and then they brought back their starter for the Arizona game.
Yeah, the right game that Justin Herbert came back was the Arizona game.
Mm-hmm.
But you, to your point, Justin, about that quote-unquote rivalry, I think that's kind of gone because Rich Rod's not here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and that all happened when Rich Rod was here. It would have been kind of awesome if, like, this was a Rich Rod Willie Taggart game. It's kind of funny to think that neither one of them is around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was definitely a thing. I mean, that's four guys. That's not like one guy. And I think a lot of those guys could have helped this Arizona team this year. I have no idea if Hockey Woods is a good player at all, but I do know that they're really thin at cornerback. So he would have had a chance.
Yeah.
For meaningful snaps, if he had decided to come here.
Can we talk about the run game for a second?
Because J.J. Taylor.
My mind is blown every week, and I know the flow of the game kind of dictates, you know, what kind of offense Arizona's running between passing and running, and they play from behind a lot, so obviously J.J. Taylor doesn't get his touches, but isn't there a point where even if you're behind, I mean, if you're trailing by 2 touchdowns, doesn't, you know, and if the pass game's not working, doesn't J.J. Taylor, even if you're behind, give you a better chance at maybe sparking the offense? Because he's had some big runs this year. He's an explosive guy, and he can lead to some big things on offense, open up the pass game a little bit. But we haven't seen it much this year, and when he gets loose, I mean, he has good games. He puts up numbers, but he's had a couple fumbles. He struggled a little bit, and he hasn't really got his touches because they've been playing from behind so much. I mean, what's it going to take for Taylor to get his touches?
I liked the way they played offense in the second half of that game last week. It was more of a run-heavy type of scheme. In the first half, it was kind of puzzling. I think it was 21 pass attempts and 13 rushes, and it flipped around in the second half, and they ended up being pretty balanced. But I would be stubborn about it. I agree with you. I would try to force the run game because I just feel like it makes everything else easier if you do that, right?
I
mean, that creates, I mean, how much mileage did UCLA get out of play action last week, sneaking the tight end or a wide receiver like right in between the linebackers and the safeties? That part of the field has just not been utilized by whether it's Khalil Tate or Rhett Rodriguez. Like, I haven't seen that other than that one, you know, that one RPO slant play that they'll run, which is not really that 15 to 20 yard area over the middle. It's maybe 10 to 15 yards on the backside. So yeah, I'm all for it because I think it just makes everything else function better on offense.
Was that game last week against UCLA the best game J.J. Taylor and Gary Brightwell have played together at Arizona?
Well, I mean, you could point to the Oregon State game, but I would say considering the competition and the fact that Laith Freck was unavailable, I would say yes.
In the circumstances.
And if he didn't have that one fumble, you know, I mean, you might be talking about someone who's like the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week again, you know? It's a shame that happened. I wish that we had a chance to talk to JJ about that the other day, but he couldn't make the interview that he was scheduled for. You know that he's such a conscientious
time.
Yeah. He's such a conscientious guy though, right? Like, you know that was just killing him.
Yeah.
That happened, and I'm sure he's been working all week to figure out like what can I do differently technique-wise, or how can I be more aware of the situation to make sure that doesn't happen again.
I ask that in part because Mario Cristobal yesterday, called the Arizona running back group the most underrated position group in the Pac-12. I think it's a good point. I think it's a good point because J.J. Taylor's a premier back in the Pac-12. I think he's one of the best rushers that the conference has. And I think, Lev, you hit the nail on the head, is I would rather force the run game than force the pass game, even if you're behind. Because I trust J.J. Taylor more than any quarterback on the roster.
And they were behind in the second half of that UCLA game, and they didn't panic. They made a good adjustment. I like Mario Cristobal, by the way. I think he's going to win big at Oregon. You know, he's got a background as an offensive line coach, so he's got a really good eye for talent. And they're actually missing their big freshman recruit, Penei Sewell, who was starting for them at left tackle. He got hurt a couple weeks ago. Which has caused Ryan Finley's favorite player, Calvin Throckmorton, to move from right tackle to left tackle.
I just want to talk about him more so I can hear you say his
right,
name.
Yeah, awesome name, right? But I think he's going to build up the lines there, and you know that Oregon's always going to recruit good, you know, skill position guys. So if you get that combination of, you know, good in the trenches plus speed, I mean, look out for Oregon in future years.
Well, I'm looking at his coaching past. And he was in a tight ends and offensive line coach at Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes to Alabama, associate head coach and offensive line coach. Becomes the co-offensive coordinator and the offensive line coach last year at Oregon under Willie Taggart. Now he's the head coach for the Ducks.
Happened quick.
I mean, could we be looking back maybe 5 years from now as Mario Cristobal possibly being the best coach in the Pac-12?
I mean, I don't know about that because there's a lot of good competition.
There's a lot of good names.
Chris Peterson and Chip Kelly and people like that. But I think he, you know, as he described the Arizona running backs as the most underrated unit, maybe he's the most underrated coach in the Pac-12. Let's put it that way.
Fun fact, he played for the Amsterdam Admirals.
Oh, nice.
Played a little Euro
NFL
ball.
Europe.
I just know the Amsterdam Admirals as the like the one of four European teams in like Madden. So 2003 or 2004, there's that option that gives you where you can play as a European team.
I know what you're talking about, yeah. I bet Ryan knows all about that.
Oh, I'm sure.
The Amsterdam Admirals.
Oh, I'm sure he knows their entire history and why they're in Amsterdam. So, Michael, let's get to know these Oregon Ducks. Last week, they were a team that was looking like they could be representing the Pac-12 in the college football playoff after a loss to Washington State. That's no more. But Oregon Ducks looking like they could be a team that could compete for a Pac-12 championship and possibly a Rose Bowl.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let's face it. When you're in that vortex of the Pac-12 North, I mean, it's tough to emerge from that unscathed, right? Like, would it surprise anyone if Washington State went to Stanford this week and lost? And then, of course, the consequence of that would be that there's not going to be a Pac-12 team in the college football playoff again.
Mm-hmm.
But people criticize the scheduling. Like, why does Oregon face, you know, Washington 1 week and Washington State the next? Or why does Washington State face Oregon 1 week and Stanford the next? But people don't say the same thing about the SEC, right? It's really tough. There's a lot of parity. And I think the North is really strong. I think Oregon is, without question, like a top 15 team in the country in terms of talent and so forth, but their record might not show it because they still have a trip to Utah on their schedule, you know? So they could end up with three or four losses at the end of the day, and it just won't be an accurate reflection of how good of a team they are. I mean, bear in mind, this is the team that has the presumptive number one pick in the draft in Justin Herbert. This would be the second time, of course, this year that Arizona has faced the presumptive number one pick in the draft, because a lot of people were saying that about Ed Oliver when they faced Houston. I do not think Ed Oliver is going to be the first pick in the draft, because you just, 6 foot tall defensive tackles just don't get taken first overall. Maybe it was a mistake for Aaron Donald to go as late as he did. That's the comp for Ed Oliver. But 6 foot six athletic quarterbacks who can make every throw in the book, like Justin Herbert, those are the type of guys that do go number one overall. There's been a lot of speculation that he's not going to leave because his brother is coming in next year, who's a tight end, I guess. And
there's been talk
that maybe he wants to play 1 year with his brother. It wouldn't be unprecedented. Peyton Manning, I know that's kind of before your time for you guys, but he played all 4 years at Tennessee. I don't know if that would happen today, but we'll see. I remember that game pretty distinctly last year. There was a lot of talk, is this the week that Justin Herbert's going to come back? He had a broken collarbone or something. He did come back, and he was pretty awesome. And he had a couple touchdown passes, a touchdown run in that game. He's very athletic for as big as he is.
You talk about, he could come back because of his brother's coming in. It sounds like, Justin Herbert could come back because playing with your brother would be awesome to do. However, when you're facing being the number one overall pick in the draft and you have millions of dollars just staring at you in the face and be like, sorry, bro. I'm gonna go play in the NFL for a little bit. But you bring up a good point. Justin Herbert, I mean, he's big. He's athletic. He's got a cannon for an arm. He's a field general, too. He just commands the offense. And Oregon just seems to be a much better team when he's at the quarterback spot.
Well, of course. There was that crazy stat last year that they averaged, 50 points or something when he played and, 15 when he didn't. That should pretty much tell you all you need to know right there. Dylan Mitchell has emerged as their go-to receiver, by the way, and the guy that has to get all of the defensive attention. He's got 42 receptions. The next closest guy on the team has 16. So that's another name that people need to watch. This is going to be an uphill battle for Arizona. I've been predicting, even when they lose, I've been predicting close scores, and I'm not sure that's going to be the case this year unless number 14 in red, white, and blue, decides to, I don't know if he's capable of it. I don't know if it's a physical thing, a mental thing, or what, but they need 2017 Khalil Tate to reemerge, right?
Absolutely.
You say if it's mental or physical, it's all of the above at this point.
Yeah, it is.
Honestly.
So since we're talking about Khalil Tate, let's go into our call-in guest who goes by the name of Chris, and this was his comment that he left on the Wildcaster app.
Hi, this is Chris. Given the way the season has gone and the way Tate has looked, both in-game and from a body language and engagement perspective, what are the chances that he is the starter for Game 1 next year, given the recruits we've got coming in and the quarterbacks on the roster already? And if he's not the starter, what are the chances that he transfers from the program?
So Chris says, for the people at Frog and Firkin, he says that, just judging Khalil Tate's body language and how he is, if he comes back next year, will he be the starter? And if he isn't the starter, what are the chances that he leaves? I think if he does come back, the chances of him starting are still pretty high, even with Grant Gunnell coming in. I know Gunnell is Mazzoni's guy, and he's out here breaking all kinds of these Texas passing records, and he's a big body. He's 6'6". When you just look at him and everything about him, you're like, oh, man, Arizona's got the next Nick Foles. But Khalil Tate, at the end of the day, is still Khalil Tate when he's healthy.
I think it also depends, and Lev, maybe you can chime in on this, is, how Khalil Tate plays the rest of the year. I mean, if he comes in, plays the rest of the games, and does, you know, pretty much what we've seen all year, does that change it at all? Or if he comes in and returns to some shadow of the Khalil Tate we saw a year ago, that obviously helps his case, and he's obviously the favorite to start next year.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Dom. I think that's a huge factor. Like, how does he finish this season? I think perhaps the biggest factor of all, if this is even something that he and his family are thinking about, is he going to graduate? Right, and he is an early enrollee, right? He enrolled in January. He's a junior, so he would have been in school for 3.5 years by spring. I don't know what the status of Khalil Tate is academically, but it's a lot easier decision to make if you're thinking about transferring if you're a grad transfer, because that means you can go and play anywhere in the country next year without having to sit out a year. Totally different story if you do have to sit out. Because that's just something that like a lot of people, you know, aren't really interested in doing, right? Yeah. Unless they're you know, at the early stages of their careers and they're just unhappy with their situation. You know, per usual, I think a lot of drama around the quarterback position at Arizona. There's been a lot of instability over the last several years. I mean, I think on some level it would be nice if someone like Kevin Doyle or Grant Gunnell could, you know, take the position early in their career and be a 2 or 3 year starter, you know, where you're not having all of this stuff all the time. We thought that was going to be the case with Khalil Tate, the way he took over the position and kind of took the Pac-12 by storm last year. But obviously things have unraveled this season for a variety of reasons.
But looking at your story that's available on the Wildcaster app and Tucson.com, Cat Stats.
Love Cat Stats, by the way.
Cat Stats,
I don't know if I've told
fun.
You that this year. Cat Stats is one of my favorite things we do. It's so
Thank
fun.
Thank you, Dom.
It's awesome.
Appreciate that.
So in terms of quarterbacks under Noel Mazzone, Khalil Tate has had the worst completion percentage, or the stats, or the numbers for Khalil Tate.
He's down
Hasn't fared compared to other Noel Mazzone quarterbacks.
It's not just him. Rhett-Rod, too.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, Rhett-Rod, we thought, would come in and like operate a more efficient offense, but if you just look at those last two games, he's under 50%.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I broke down all the numbers of completion percentage for Arizona, where they rank this season, sort of, you know, where they fit into the landscape of college football these days. I mean, the nationwide completion percentage is over 60%. It's a hair over 60. And they're down around 53%. Now, you know, completion percentage isn't the end-all, be-all. There are other factors that go into it besides the quarterback, and you can have drop passes and throwaways and so forth. But, I mean, that's kind of an alarming statistic to me. Trevor Knight is really the only one who's ever been down in that low 50s category under Noel Mazzone. When he was at UCLA, they were in the mid to upper 60s with Brett Hundley being the main guy. And I don't, to me, like, I look at a handful of statistics, basic statistics, when I look at quarterbacks. Like, touchdown to interception ratio is super important to me, and completion percentage is another one. And if you're not, you know, if you're not up in that 60 to 65 range, I mean, that's why there have been so many references this year by Kevin Sumlin to the offense being inefficient, right? How do you sustain drives? How do you keep drives going? You know, you got to complete those plays that are there. Yeah, J.J. Taylor. Yeah.
All right, guys, real quick, since we only have a few minutes left, let's preview this game. Arizona-Oregon kickoff set for 7:30 p.m. at Arizona Stadium. It is homecoming, so there is a little added motivation. I mean, it's a game against Oregon.
If you need
one of the better
motivation.
Exactly. It's a game against a team that's one of the better programs in the Pac-12. I don't think you need much motivation for Saturday night. However, we still don't know what the quarterback situation is. I think maybe Khalil Tate off 1 week off that ankle. I don't know if that's enough for Arizona to get a win. Even a healthy Khalil Tate, a completely healthy Khalil Tate, this is an uphill battle for Arizona. And Michael Lev brought up a good point, personnel. I think Oregon has more players. They have more guys on the other side of the ball that's able to get them the win. So I think Oregon will win this one 38-24. I'll give Oregon a 2-touchdown advantage.
I was, you know, when you started talking about the preview, I started thinking of scores, and I was a touchdown off yours. I think Arizona needs to run the ball more effectively, and they haven't done it this year. I don't think they're going to do it this week. I think they're going to rely a lot on their quarterback, whoever that may be. And I don't know, Oregon's just too tough. I mean, like you both pointed out, they're too deep at every position. They're better at Arizona at every position. I mean, it's going to be hard for Arizona to find an edge, but they're a 20-point underdog. 20 points? That's the spread?
No, I think it's 10.
Okay.
10. Okay. Not 20.
Getting ahead of myself.
Come on,
okay, so 10. they're home. I got to give them some credit. So it's a 10-point spread. Look, that can change quick. If Arizona comes out, it's homecoming. If, you know, Justin Herbert throws a pick on the first drive, if J.J. Taylor or Khalil Tate breaks it. Imagine if Khalil Tate breaks a 70-yard touchdown run on the first drive. I mean, the whole script changes. I mean, it's a completely different game. Arizona has life.
Imagine that. But we haven't imagined that.
Imagine that. Well, that's why I'm saying imagine that. My prediction is going to be Oregon 45, Arizona 24. I don't think it's going to be close. Oregon's just way too good. Herbert's the best quarterback in the Pac-12 by far, if not the best in the country, and it's just going to be too much for Arizona to handle. They might hang with them for a little bit, but it won't last.
Tua Tagovailoa has something to say about who the best quarterback in the country is.
But that's fair. I said one of them. One of them in the country, definitely the best in Pac-12.
I'm going to go with Oregon 35, Arizona 21. Same 14-point margin. They're going to have to, I think, place ball control. You know, I like what you're saying, Dom, as far as running the ball. I feel like that would be to their benefit. I'm pretty sure they haven't won time of possession in a single game this year. It would be a good time to turn that around. If Khalil Tate plays, does he have to be amazing? No, but he has to be a willing runner. Okay, that means taking it when it's there. And then just operate the offense more efficiently than he has been. I mean, we referenced the team completion percentage being around 53. That's got to be at least 60, right, in this game and going forward. It's just kind of the standard level for college football these days. I mean, it's an offensive sport. If you can't do that, you're in trouble. And they also, hey, let's maybe make a play on special teams. I think Sean Brown was pretty close to breaking one. Last week against a really good punter against UCLA. We haven't had a Sean Brown punt return touchdown this year. Hey, I'm going to call it right now. Sean Brown is going to return a punt for a touchdown in this game. How about
that?
I like it. And if that happens, you get better quarterback play, ball control, maybe a turnover, maybe a special teams, a big play. You've got a chance.
So you're saying another?
I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm saying that's what's needed for this to possibly be an upset.
Another episode of Pac-12 After Dark is basically what you're saying. Arizona needs
all of us. 7:30. It's going to be After Dark regardless.
We don't root for any team, but I think we're all rooting for that because it would be a more interesting game if that
wackiness.
Happened.
Arizona needs a spark because, I mean, they need a big punt returner, a big play from Tate or Taylor or someone because, like we said, they haven't been efficient this year, so they need to find something else on offense. By the way, quick hit on J.J. Taylor. It's small sample size. He's been here for a while. Hasn't done it much, but pun intended. When he rushes for 100 yards, Arizona is 4-1 in J.J. Taylor's career. Their first loss coming last week at UCLA. So they need to get him the ball and see what happens.
Real quick, since we won't be here in time for Halloween because it'll be after Halloween next week, what's the best Halloween candy?
The best Halloween candy. Okay. I like sort of the classic candy bars, you know. So I would say any of those Hershey's minis are really good. Little Snickers are really good. I like stuff with nuts in them. So give me like a Crackle or a Hershey with almonds or the dark chocolate.
Not even a Crunch bar or a Crackle.
Is that
the same thing? Crunch, Crackle?
I think
they're
Crackle's
two different candy bars.
No, Crackle is the one by Hershey, right?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. It's like the same thing as a Crunch
bar. It's like the Nestle Crunch equivalent, you know? But I would say if like I absolutely had to vote for just one, I would probably vote for the Snickers.
We'll put
Snickers
out
number one. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups is up there too. Yeah,
Reese is a good call. I was always a huge Three Musketeers fan growing up, and people thought I was crazy. I don't know why. I mean, the Three Musketeers is a pretty popular candy bar, right? People like it.
It's like a little too sweet for me. Without having the nuts in there, you know, it's just a hair too sweet. Not that I'm saying I'm turning it down, but we're doing the rankings.
Going Three Musketeers or Milky Way all day.
Milky
every day.
Way. Milky I was going to say Milky Way.
Midnight,
thank you.
Midnight Milky Ways.
The dark chocolate Milky Ways? Is
Top
that what
notch.
You're talking about?
Yeah.
Is that what the midnight?
They're called midnight. I don't know what the... I mean, sure.
Milky Ways are great. Anyways.
Yeah.
So, happy Halloween, guys.
What's yours, Justin?
Crackle?
Definitely not a Crackle. I'm more of a Snickers. So, we're doing, like, Halloween candy power rankings right now.
Yeah.
Snickers, Reese's, Milky Way. I always save the fruit flavored Tootsie Rolls for last.
I like
those
that.
Those are bad.
No,
those
no
are,
like
those gross. Are bad. Nobody likes those.
No, like Skittles or M&M's or anything by anyone here, huh?
M&M's are very underrated.
M&M's like, are great.
I like M&M's fine. I like many, many of the candies. I will be rating my kids' trick-or-treat bags for sure.
Power rankings for Halloween bags. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcats podcast. The Arizona Wildcats take on the Oregon Ducks this Saturday at Arizona Stadium, kickoff set for 7:30 p.m. You can catch all of our coverage available on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster app that's available on the App Store and Google Play. And special thanks to Frog and Firkin for hosting the Wildcast podcast. For Justin. Jesus. For Dom, for Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Pima Federal Credit Union. Pima Federal Credit Union is always looking for ways to save their members time and money, which is why they offer completely free checking with convenient options for banking on the go. Manage your accounts online, access over 55,000 fee-free ATMs nationwide, and easily deposit checks from your phone with their mobile app. Visit www.pimafederal.org to learn about the many ways their members save. Pima Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.